Neo means new in Latin, and in evolutionary terms, the neocortex is the youngest part of the brain. So we use it to analyze and calculate, and it is also our language center. But it is also the part of the brain that allows us to worry about what will happen in 2 weeks' time, or allows us to stay irritated about a past event. The mammalian or emotional brain is where we process the emotions we share with other animals, such as fear, aggression, love, and sorrow. The limbic system is found in this part of the brain. A layer deeper is the reptilian brain, where we find the functions we share with reptiles. Our blood pressure, heart rate, and breathing are regulated here. Likewise, our reptilian brain keeps our body temperature at 36.8 degrees Celsius or 98.2 degrees Fahrenheit without our conscious attention. The neocortex also filters external stimuli. Research has shown that today we are exposed to as many external stimuli in one day as someone living in the Middle Ages encountered during a lifetime. We make an average of 2,800 choices each day, every day. So it is not surprising that at some point we will receive too many signals to handle. One way the resulting agitation manifests itself is in more rapid breathing. An overstimulated neocortex can make us breathe faster. But you can also use your neocortex to slow down your breathing. Breathing exercises to help you relax. The exercises in my book, Viradiming, are mainly focused on relaxation and restoring a normal balance between oxygen and carbon dioxide in the body. Here are two breathing exercises that are good for relaxation. Breathe in through your nose. Breathe out through your nose. Pause. Breathe in through your nose. Breathe out through your nose. Pause. Don't pause as long as possible, but just until you feel the need to breathe again. If this exercise doesn't relax you, breathe out through your mouth. Breathe in through your nose. Breathe out through your mouth, prolonging the breath a little. Pause. Breathe in through your nose. Breathe out through your mouth, prolonging the breath a little. Pause. You can easily prolong your breath by holding back so your cheeks puff out a little as you breathe out. It is good to relax by practicing these breathing exercises for 2 minutes before you start doing the WHM exercises. The WHM exercises are completely different and serve a different purpose, which will be explained later. The WHM breathing exercises. The Wim Hof breathing exercises are not intended to relax you, at least not while you are doing them. They are designed to enable you to control your mind and body so you can influence your autonomic nervous system. At first, the WHM exercises will make you lightheaded. It is hard work to keep your attention focused while doing the exercises properly. So far, we have only referred to breathing exercises and not to meditation. Yet Hof's exercises have their origins in a Tibetan technique known as Tummo meditation. Tummo is a form of meditation with its roots in the Indian Vajrayana tradition. Vajrayana is a religion that probably emerged around the 4th century AD. In which was heavily influenced by tantric and Hindu teaching. Vajrayana works from a cause and effect perspective. The aim is to transform every experience into fearless wisdom, spontaneous joy, and energetic love. Hof emphasizes that this does not necessitate or imply faith in a higher power. Rather, that what you experience be true for yourself. Followers of Vajrayana see the method as the most important link in achieving enlightenment through the Buddha's teaching. Tummo technique. Tummo combines breathing with visualization. It involves breathing in deeply and breathing out slowly. While breathing, practitioners visualize flames as a method to help raise their body temperature. Because they focus on experience and not on faith, they also embrace science. In the scientific journal PLOS ONE, researchers from the National University of Singapore described their studies of nuns who practiced Tummo meditation. They discovered that the nuns could generate extra body heat, increasing their temperatures to 38.3 degrees Celsius or 100.9 degrees Fahrenheit in an ambient temperature of minus 25 degrees Celsius, that's minus 13 degrees Fahrenheit. With their bodies, they were also able to dry wet clothes which were wrapped around them. Wim Hof did not study Tummo directly. He learned everything from nature, not from a religion. However, after his own experience, a knowledge of Tummo helped Wim gain a deeper understanding of the power of cold. And what most appeals to him is the idea that Vajrayana is a religion based on experience, not faith. It is about experiencing, not believing. Every proposition can ultimately be checked against your own experience. One of Wim's favorite one-liners is, quote, feeling is understanding, unquote. And that's exactly what the Tummo techniques encourage. Do it yourself, the WHM breathing exercises. A word of warning in advance. Don't do this breathing exercise in a position or location where fainting might be dangerous, such as in the shower, underwater, while standing up, or in the car. Do it under supervision the first time. Breathe in deeply and then exhale. Breathe in deeply and then exhale. Breathe in deeply, then exhale. Breathe at a pace and rhythm that feel most comfortable. Repeat this 30 times. The last time, breathe out completely, then in again very deeply, out again slowly, and then wait. Breathe in deeply without forcing yourself and then out again slowly. By not fully breathing out, a small amount of air remains behind in the lungs. After doing that 30 times, hold your breath after breathing out and wait until you feel the need to breathe in again. Repeat this exercise until you feel tingling, light in the head, or sluggish. By breathing in deeply and out slowly, you expel a lot of carbon dioxide. The CO2 concentration in your blood will decrease and your blood vessels will contract. When you hold your breath after breathing out, your body retains a large quantity of carbon dioxide, and your body compensates by releasing more oxygen in the mitochondria. Mitochondria supply the energy for your body's cells. More oxygen in the mitochondria generates more energy. Waste substances are expelled and the oxygen has more room to penetrate deeper into the cell. Holding your breath after exhaling leads to a parasympathetic reaction. In other words, you relax. This leads to aerobic dissimulation in the cell. By breathing more deeply and consciously, we can therefore generate more energy in the cell. Pineal gland. After these breathing exercises, many people experience an expanded form of consciousness. This is likely from the mitochondrial activity in the brain cells releasing chemicals in the pituitary and pineal glands. The pineal gland, epiphysis cerebri, is very important for determining our state of mind. It produces melatonin, a hormone that plays an important role in our sleep, wake, and reproductive rhythms. Our hypothesis is that through the WHM breathing exercises, more oxygen enters the pineal gland, so the body will generate a lot more oxygen. That explains why the exercises work so well in combating jet lag, sleeping problems, and depression. Interestingly, in Eastern philosophies, the pineal gland is seen as the seat of the soul. The French philosopher René Descartes also considered it to be the link between body and soul. He was one of the first Western thinkers to quote-unquote promote the pineal gland. Breath retention. You can check whether your body changes during the breathing exercises by measuring how long you can hold your breath. Check how long you can hold your breath before doing the exercises and then again afterwards. You will notice that you can hold your breath longer and longer. It is good if your retention time, the time between breathing out and back in again, gets longer, but don't make a competition out of it. It is a way to determine if the method is working, not an end in itself. Summary. Many people breathe quicker or deeper than necessary. A disrupted breathing pattern is related to a series of health problems. Breathing exercises affect brain activity. There are exercises you can use to relax. The WHM uses breathing to access the pineal gland. Oxygen activates the expulsion of waste substances. Carbon dioxide opens the blood vessels. Commitment. The cold training and breathing exercises are two major components of the Wim Hof method, but to properly put these two components into practice, you need to make a serious commitment. Especially at first, it is not easy to turn off the warm water and stand under a cold shower for 2 minutes. Those 2 minutes seem to last forever. And daily breathing exercises are quite a task, too. Where will you find the time? And the motivation? A day with Wim Hof will give you motivation enough. His enthusiasm and experience will encourage you to get started with his method. This has nothing to do with behavior-changing approaches like neuro-linguistic programming, also known as NLP. It is simply an overwhelming enthusiasm that seems to come from the depths of his soul. To help motivate you to take cold showers and give the breathing exercises a try, We will describe a fantastic example of what your body is capable of if you make a serious commitment. Running a marathon bare-chested above the Arctic Circle. Wim Hof underwent an extreme challenge to demonstrate how making a commitment and controlling your mind are more important than physical training. He ran a marathon above the Arctic Circle. This was the most difficult task he had ever undertaken. Hof took this challenge in 2009 at the age of 50. Running a marathon at minus 16 degrees Celsius or 3.2 degrees Fahrenheit was not enough. He ran only wearing shorts and sandals with no socks. He did this to test his knowledge of his body. He knew that a lot is possible, but he didn't just want to pass that knowledge to others at an intellectual level. Wim wanted to experience it for himself. His preparation training and the marathon in Finland were filmed by Firecracker Films, a company that frequently works for the BBC and National Geographic. The documentary was later shown on the television program Daredevils. Physical training, or training the commitment? People who prepare for marathons in normal temperatures usually have training programs and gradually build up their running distances. But Wim didn't use a training program and hardly went running at all. He just trained with the cold and his thoughts while focusing on the commitment. Hof prepared by doing extra breathing exercises and cold training. In the winter, he swam in the canals of Amsterdam at night. To get accustomed to even more extreme conditions, he trained in the cold storage at a slaughterhouse where the temperature was minus 25 degrees Celsius, which is minus 13 degrees Fahrenheit. He practiced his breathing techniques and grew increasingly confident that he could take on the challenge. After the training sessions, he felt strong and in good spirits. Glenn David, an expert on polar survival, had serious misgivings. Breathing is extremely difficult at such temperatures, and running makes you breathe more deeply. He felt that it was practically impossible to do that for hours on end in such conditions. In Finland, Hof went to Finland 6 days before the marathon. It was cold, even by Finnish standards. The day before the marathon, he practiced once more in the extreme cold by swimming for several dozen meters under the ice. Doctors who examined him on the spot couldn't understand it. His heart rate, blood pressure, and oxygen saturation were the same before and after he had been swimming. Hof felt good and decided he was ready for the challenge. During the marathon, Hof was constantly balancing on a fine thread. If he ran too fast, he used too much energy and had to breathe in too deeply, which is not possible at 16 degrees Celsius below zero, or 3.2 degrees Fahrenheit. If he ran too slowly, he would be exposed to the cold for too long and could risk suffering the serious effects of freezing. After running for 2 hours, everything was still going fine. His legs felt heavy, but his pace was still constant. At that point, he had run about half of the 42,195 meters, or 26.2 miles. However, at 30 kilometers, 18.6 miles, and running for a little over 3 hours, fatigue set in. He was clearly tired and suffering from the cold. His second wife, Caroline, was ahead of him in a car with the film crew and a doctor. She was worried because the situation could become very dangerous. But Hof kept going, even when he had to walk after 37 kilometers, or 23 miles. After 5 hours and 25 minutes, Hof had accomplished the impossible. He ran a marathon above the Arctic Circle in extremely cold temperatures, bare-chested, with no marathon training. Such an extreme commitment only seems possible for exceptional individuals like Wim Hof. But he refuses to believe that, and to prove it years later, he decided to go to the top of Mount Kilimanjaro with a group of people to do the impossible as a group. Mount Kilimanjaro. Hof decided he would climb Mount Kilimanjaro with a group of people. Kilimanjaro is a 5,895-meter or 3.66 mile high mountain in Tanzania. It is a very popular expedition for mountaineers and hikers. Well-trained climbers can get to the top in 6 days. To make the challenge even greater, Hof wanted to climb Kilimanjaro in 48 hours with a group of 26 people. Hof wanted to show that we are all capable of doing much more than most people think is even possible. With this expedition too, everyone said it was impossible to get to the top in 48 hours with such a large group. As if that wasn't enough, some of the people in the group were suffering from diseases like multiple sclerosis, rheumatism, Crohn's disease, and cancer. They also had no climbing experience. The date was set for January 2014, and the run-up to the expedition was chaotic. Dr. Geert Beege of the Amsterdam Medical Center wanted to accompany the expedition in a personal capacity to help the group. The local guides thought the whole thing was a bad idea. At the last moment, the guides decided not to go. However, Hoff was resolute that this group was capable of reaching the top by focusing on their breathing and because they had prepared with cold training. So they went. When the group arrived at Horombo Hut, a small huddle of climbing huts at the altitude of 3,705 meters, or 2.3 miles, the temperature had fallen to 3 degrees Celsius, or 37.4 degrees Fahrenheit. As if climbing the top of Kilimanjaro in 48 hours with 26 people, many of whom were ill, was not enough, Wim suggested they walk bare-chested and in shorts. Breathing and cold training were the secrets. He gave instructions to his mixed bunch of companions, then divided them into pairs. Each partner had to watch out for each other, and in particular, they had to make sure to keep doing their breathing exercises. They had to keep breathing in deeply and exhaling calmly and slowly. To combat altitude sickness, they also woke up during the night to keep performing the breathing exercises. To everyone's amazement, except Hoff's, of course, the group performed an exceptional feat. 24 of the 26 reached Uhuru Peak, the top of the mountain, at 5,895 meters, 3.66 miles. The temperature at the peak was minus 15 degrees Celsius, 5 degrees Fahrenheit. The fact that such a large group had reached the top was an achievement in itself. It was extra special since the group had no climbing experience. When they reached the top within 48 hours, it was almost impossible to comprehend. The feat attracted the attention of the media. Hoff and Beege found themselves sitting at the table on Pauw & Witteman, a leading Dutch current affairs program. Several newspapers carried stories about the triumph. How was something like this possible? Hoff is convinced of the power of his breathing exercises, and although the group had no climbing experience, they were well trained to withstand the cold. Commitment to the feat was, of course, an important factor. The members of the group who were suffering with diseases included Anna Kojnaka, who had MS, Mark Bos, who had prostate cancer, Henk Vandenberg, with rheumatism, and Matthijs Storm and Hans Emmink, with Crohn's disease. They all walked to the summit, too. All of these people knew they were ill, but they did not see themselves as patients. They made that clear time and again. This idea proves to be an important component of the commitment. Quote, "Of course I'm a patient too," unquote, says Matthijs Storm. "But I'm also just Matthijs who wants to and can do all kinds of things," unquote. Kilimanjaro 2015. In January 2015, Hoff returned to Kilimanjaro with a new group. This time, the goal was to get to the top in 36 hours. Once again, Hoff wanted to show people that they can accomplish much more than they might imagine. The WHM exercises worked well. 15 of the 19 participants succeeded in completing the climb bare-chested. The group did not climb all the way to Uhuru Peak, but stopped at Gilman's Point, on the rim of the crater at 5,685 meters, or 3.53 miles. The group chose safety over their egos. One of the members proposed to his wife at Gilman's Point. Side effects of the WHM. The Wim Hof method comprises three components: cold training, breathing exercises, and commitment. It also involves more. The interviews conducted for this book showed that people who did cold training and breathing exercises found that other things in their lives changed too. They slept better, walked or played a sport more often, and appreciated the daylight more. We are not going to examine all these changes, but two were particularly noticeable, as they were often mentioned: walking barefoot and eating less. Walking barefoot. A surprising number of people who use the WHM start walking barefoot. After 10 interviews, 8 of the interviewees had started walking barefoot. It can't be a coincidence. Hoff himself doesn't pay much attention to it, but he often walks barefoot too. Many people consider walking barefoot to be healthy. Once you start looking for it, you see how many people run barefoot, and the subject crops up regularly in newspapers and magazines. The main message of these articles is that walking barefoot strengthens the muscles in the foot, muscles that are hardly used when you wear shoes, and increases your bone mass. The feet contain 200,000 nerve endings, which sounds like an enormous amount. It explains why walking barefoot is so sensitive. Setting your feet down lightly can feel very pleasant and comfortable. To some people, it feels like a massage. We also walk differently on our bare feet and put more weight on the front of our feet. Steve Robbins and Adele Hanna's study of 17 recreational runners in 1987 showed that after 4 months of not wearing shoes, the longitudinal arch of the foot was shortened by an average of 4.7 millimeters, or 3/16 of an inch. Robbins and Hanna suggested that this change must have been caused by the enhanced activation of the foot muscles, and that this may help in reducing or preventing stress on the plantar fascia, on the underside of the foot. This worked well in the study, because the transition to running barefoot was gradual. Studies where the change happened too quickly reported an increased risk of foot injury. Earthing. Proponents of walking barefoot emphasize that, quote-unquote, earthing, making contact with the Earth's electrical field, has a favorable effect on health. The Earth is negatively charged, while the air is full of positive ions. The quantity of positive ions has greatly increased in recent years with the widespread use of radios, televisions, cell phones, and other forms of wireless communications. Too many positive ions can disrupt the balance between positive and negative. Quote, because of our modern lifestyles, we have become isolated from the Earth, not a healthy situation, unquote, says electrical engineer Clinton Ober. He discovered the positive health effects of earthing, which connects us with the negative electrons on the Earth's surface. Can you counteract the surplus of positive electrons by being in contact with the Earth? That's a tough question. The contact is partly thwarted by thick rubber soles, which insulate us from the electrical discharge. Walking barefoot puts you in direct contact with the Earth, and that gives you more energy. One interviewee who said that he now walks barefoot more often is Richard Deleth. Deleth studied medicine at the VU University in Amsterdam and applies a mix of Western and Eastern medicine in his practice. His book, Oersterk, which has sold more than 70,000 copies, is an appeal to people to eat healthier foods. One of his pet topics is eating less sugar. Deleth has a favorite quote by T.S. Eliot, who won the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1948. Quote, where is the wisdom we have lost in knowledge? Where is the knowledge we have lost in information? Unquote. In his quest for wisdom, Deleth came across Wim Hof. In 2013, he took part in one of Hof's workshops. He did the breathing exercises and sat in a bath of ice cubes. He described his experiences that day as exceptional. After only a few exercises, he could hold his breath for 2.5 minutes and did 60 push-ups without breathing. The ice bath felt good, too. His body turned red immediately, a sign of good circulation. Several months after the workshop, we asked Deleth whether he still uses the methods he learned. He said he still does the breathing exercises and looks forward to the snow in winter so that he can go barefoot outside. What has changed permanently for him is walking barefoot much more often, in the house and outside, and that it feels good. Diet. Many people who start applying the Wim Hof method also start eating differently. Hof hardly eats at all. He rarely has breakfast and doesn't eat lunch. He only eats in the evening, but as much as he wants and whatever he feels like eating. Jack Egberts was one of the first people to study Hof's eating habits. Jack is the lawyer from Leeuwarden, who we mentioned earlier in the chapter about cold training. We will examine his detective work more closely here because his results show parallels with the Wim Hof method. Jack's approach to eating is simple to do, but effectively penetrates to the core of many diseases related to prosperity. Egberts discovered a dietary philosophy very similar to the way Hof eats, the quote-unquote Fast Five diet. Just to be clear, Wim does not encourage people to actively adopt this way of eating, but eats this way instinctively. What Hof and Jack Egberts do can be summed up very simply. Eat during a 5-hour period each day, no more. The Fast Five diet was rediscovered by Bert Herring, a former Air Force doctor. As a doctor, he knew that there was no physiological reason for all men and women over the age of 40 to become overweight. And yet, in the mirror, he saw a man with a large double chin, breasts, and a belly. He wanted to get rid of his excess weight. But instead of going straight to the gym, he first went to the library. He learned more about diseases of prosperity and their causes. He reread his old textbooks. He discovered that it is not only important what we eat, but how often. Often, other large mammals eat only once a day. They are hardly ever overweight and rarely suffer from cardiovascular disease, diabetes, or cancer. Since we are also large mammals, Herring felt that people are not made to eat all day. He talked to his wife Judy, also a doctor and a few pounds too heavy, about it, and they decided to do an experiment together. For a month, they ate as much as they liked and whatever they liked, but only between 5 in the afternoon and 10 o'clock at night. The results were astounding. Herring saw muscles appearing in places where he only knew of their existence because of his anatomical knowledge. He shed the pounds, his blood pressure fell, his gums were no longer infected. He felt much more energetic and had the desire to go running. The same thing happened to his wife. She was also pleasantly surprised at the effects. Curious friends adopted the new eating habits and experienced similar results. Herring decided to name the method of eating for only 5 hours a day the quote-unquote Fast 5 diet. He wrote an ebook about it, which he made available for free on the internet. The former Air Force doctor said that he didn't want to earn money from such a simple physiological truth. He emphasized that the basis of his method could be written on the back of a beer mat. Only eat for a period of 5 hours a day. In the book, he explains that this practice trains your body to mainly use fat as fuel instead of glucose. This idea also ties in with the production of brown fat during cold training. At first, like Jack Egbert's, most people will still feel hungry. At 5 o'clock in the afternoon, they will likely have a serious attack of the munchies. That is normal. But after a few days, that desire will have almost disappeared. There's no need to fight against it, as the desire will soon weaken. You don't need to worry about fainting, even though you might feel a bit weak in the first few days, unless you have diabetes and don't adapt your medication. The Fast 5 diet way of eating imposes no restrictions on your calorie intake, but soon you start to automatically eat less. That is why it is important to mainly eat food with a high nutritional value. Herring recommends a combination of vegetables, fruit, fish, and chicken to provide a good variety. You will notice as your body becomes accustomed to this quote-unquote simpler diet, and as you use up more fat than glucose, you will lose around 300 grams, or 0.66 pounds, a week. Your energy levels will also be more consistent. Now that we have described the Wim Hof method and the link between breathing, cold, and commitment, what does science say about the WHM? In the next chapter, we describe the research conducted at the Radboud Medical Center and the remarkable insights of Professor Pierre Capel. Who can benefit from the Wim Hof method? Now you know what the Wim Hof method entails and what scientific studies have discovered about it. The next question is, who can benefit from it? We have already mentioned a number of diseases such as rheumatism, obesity, and Lyme disease. Trying the WHM with other diseases may also be worth it. Before we describe a number of diseases and give examples of people who have started working with breathing exercises and cold training, we would first like to show how the WHM can help perfectly healthy people. Healthy people. No one in their right mind would take cold showers to stay healthy. If you are in perfect health, you're simply not concerned about being ill, or even the possibility that you might get ill. But there is still every reason for healthy people to take cold showers or swim outside in the cold. It gives you the feeling that you are alive, really alive, especially if you have a job that requires sitting down most of the time. Even if the job is fine, you might not exactly spring out of bed every morning excited about getting to work. Taking a cold shower is a great start to the day. You will find yourself bursting with energy. Athletes. Dutch champion skater Sven Kramer takes an ice bath after heavy training sessions to recover more quickly. After heavy training or a race, athletes' muscles produce substances like lactate that can stay in the body for a long time. Athletes want to get rid of surplus lactate as quickly as possible so that they can start intensive training again without delay. Strenuous physical exercise also causes microscopic damage to the muscles. If you rest sufficiently, the damage is repaired and the body becomes stronger. This process is known as supercompensation. Hydrotherapy, sitting in an ice bath, speeds up the process of removing waste materials from the body. First, the blood vessels constrict. Then, when you get out of the ice bath, circulation resumes more actively. Research into the effect of a cold bath or alternate hot and cold baths show that the athlete's muscles are less stiff the following day. Bleakley et al. Conducted a large-scale literature study of the effects of cold water baths on the body's ability to recover. Of the 58 studies they examined, they only found 17 good enough to explore in more detail. They compared cold baths with warm baths and passive recovery. One study compared cold baths and active recovery, running at an easy pace for 15 minutes. The results showed that 24 hours after the physical activity, athletes who took a cold bath experienced less muscle pain than those who had passively recovered. After this brief look at healthy people and athletes, we will now describe the WHM in relation to a number of diseases and other health problems. Again, we would like to emphasize that this information is not intended to encourage you to stop regular treatments. It is also not intended to undermine or judge quote-unquote conventional medical treatment. But we do want to encourage you to understand the link between the effect of breathing on the billions of cells in our bodies and possibly health problems or disorders. Blood pressure. The heart pumps the blood through the arteries, which generates pressure on the blood vessels. If this pressure rises too high, it increases the risk of cardiovascular disease. Doctors measure two values when testing the blood pressure: the higher level, systolic, and the lower level, diastolic. Blood pressure is expressed in terms of these two levels. Normal blood pressure is considered to be a systolic level of 120 mmHg, which is millimeters of mercury, and a diastolic level of 80 mmHg. People with high blood pressure rarely notice any symptoms, but the continuous pressure on the blood vessels can cause damage to the organs and other structures, including the heart muscles, arteries, eyes, kidneys, and brain. The systolic level is the most variable and is particularly responsive to stress, but the diastolic pressure is a good indication of cardiovascular disease risk. If the diastolic pressure is above 95, doctors will prescribe a course of treatment. They will also advise the patient to give up smoking, eat a healthier diet, consume less salt, lose weight, get at least half an hour's physical activity a day, and learn how to manage stress. If all those lifestyle changes do not help, the next step is to prescribe medication. We feel it is a shame that doctors do not include exposure to cold in their advice. As seen in the chapter on cold training, you can train your blood vessels by exposing them to cold. Blood vessels contract in response to cold to secure the supply of blood to the vital organs. They open again when the body warms up. You can train them by closing them forcefully in response to cold and then opening them again by leaving the cold. If you have high blood pressure, it seems to be something good to try. Of course, start by taking cold showers. Do not jump straight into an ice bath. It certainly helped Jack Egbert's mother, also described in the chapter in cold training. After taking cold showers for a month and after consulting with her doctor, she was able to stop taking her medication. Cancer. The reason we are discussing cancer in this book is because of Capel's ideas on NF-KB described in the previous chapter. To put it mildly, it is a little sensitive to talk about cancer in a book by Wim Hof on the importance of cold training and breathing exercises. As a friend of mine said very succinctly, quote, "You're writing a book with Wim Hof? Isn't that the guy who says he can cure cancer just with breathing exercises and cold showers?" Unquote. Wim has never claimed he can cure cancer. He would never say that. Yet my friend's hair stands on end when he hears the name Wim Hof. We hear reactions like this quite often. People who dismiss Wim as someone who gives people false hope. Wim Hof says that he does not cure cancer. Yet, astronaut and physicist Wubbo Ockels, who suffered from kidney cancer, started swimming in the cold water of the canals in Amsterdam after a week with Hof. And Dutch philosopher laureate René Goude, suffering from bone cancer, started doing Wim's breathing exercises. And journalist Mark Bosch, with prostate cancer, has a cold seat in his shed. A sort of wooden tub that you can sit in where the temperature is consistently 1 degree Celsius, which is 33.8 degrees Fahrenheit. Were these men desperately searching for a cure? On a leading Dutch current affairs television program, Ockels said that his American doctor had given him a year to live at maximum, but Ockels did not accept that. He said that he wanted to use the strength of his mind to make his body strong. He was looking for the primal human within himself, and he said he was grateful to the cancer for giving him the opportunity to learn a lot more and to meet so many new people. Ockels wanted to cure himself completely, but he died on May 18, 2014. The evening before Ockels died, national newspaper reporter Arno Gelder visited him in the hospital. He wrote of the meeting, "We shook each other's hands. He took off his oxygen mask. 'Hello, Wubbo,' I said. I was at a loss for words, but Ockels was alert and happy that I had come to see him. Quote, I've got a statement, unquote, he said. Quote, for your readers, we have to work towards a new religion, a new energy, and it's called humanity. It's all on the desktop of my computer. Martin will send it to you, unquote. Gelder asked him whether he was afraid. Quote, of death? No, not at all. I've had a great life, a fantastic life, but it is terrible for Joe's and the children. That is what troubles my soul the most, unquote. Ockles fought until the last moment. He couldn't beat his own disease, but he had the strength and energy to inspire others right up to the end. Journalist and documentary maker Mark Bolsch is also fighting his illness. He described finding out about Wim Hof after he was diagnosed with cancer and what he is doing with his knowledge of the WHM. Bolsch learned that he had prostate cancer in September 2012. His prostate was seriously enlarged and the cancer had spread to his pubic bone. He was told that the cancer was inoperable. After this diagnosis, he underwent further tests at the Radboud University Medical Center and received more bad news. The cancer had also spread to his liver and was untreatable. Because of unpleasant side effects, Bolsch refused injections, but did take pills and set out on a quest. He started investigating his own disease, as though it were an interesting topic for a documentary. He also started to do more physical activity and eat a healthier diet. He instinctively felt that it was a good time to do everything he considered healthy, but which he had never had time for as a journalist. In any case, he wanted to do something. By way of studying neuro-linguistic programming, or NLP, he discovered the book Quantum Healing by Deepak Chopra. He also became acquainted with psychotherapy and Wim Hof. This was a logical sequence of his quest. Bolsch tries to see his cancer as a companion, one that might always be with him. Yet his ultimate wish is to be cured. Cold training and breathing exercises play an important role in his efforts to keep himself as physically fit and as positive as possible with healthy living. After the first training with Wim Hof, he was very enthusiastic about the effects. He had more energy and his mood was very positive for several days. So he decided to continue training with Wim Hof. He went to Poland for a week to do cold training in the mountains and did breathing exercises for more than an hour each day. The results were promising. After a scan in the hospital, he heard good news. To the doctor's surprise, there was no sign of the cancer in his bones anymore. Now that the cancer was no longer spreading, the doctor said that there was a small chance of curing it by removing the affected glands, followed by a 7-week course of radiation therapy. At first, Bolsch wasn't very enthusiastic, but he didn't want to put his fate in the hands of faith healers and die without having been treated. So he agreed to the operation. It was not a success. The doctors removed 41 glands, 17 of which proved to be affected by cancer, but the tumor in his prostate proved too large. The radiation therapist canceled the planned course of treatment, which was 35 sessions in 7 weeks, because they felt that it would not do any good. Bolsch was back at square one. He had undergone a serious operation for nothing. He was completely exhausted and disillusioned. He had to get his confidence in his recovery back, and that is what he did. Just before his operation, Bolsch had decided to take part in the expedition to climb Kilimanjaro, as mentioned before in the chapter on commitment. His desire to get to the top was an enormous incentive to start working with the WHM again. He started training and improved his fitness. By December 2013, he was able to run 19 kilometers again. But just as everything seemed to be going in the right direction again, Bolsch had to deal with yet another setback. His prostate-specific antigen, or PSA, which had been 52 before the operation, had risen to 200 after the surgery and was now higher than 300. It was a disaster. Bolsch had to take it much easier with the training and sustained an injury as well. But he still went to Kilimanjaro. Through a combination of commitment and breathing exercises, he got to the top. Bolsch has never believed that the WHM could cure him, but he has noticed that it gives him extra energy every day so he can live his life more positively and more actively. Considering the circumstances, he feels great. He runs, does breathing exercises, and cold training every day. Instead of lying in bed ill with prostate cancer, he lives his life to the fullest. He has a new girlfriend and travels a lot. He has made a documentary about his illness, his quest, and his experiences. It is called Retour Himmel, a return ticket to heaven. Does he have advice for people with cancer? Bosch says, quote, no, not for fellow cancer patients. My story is an example of how you can improve your life circumstances yourself. But I do have some advice for the doctors who treat us. They should come out of their straitjackets of guidelines and protocols and show a little more interest in how people who do it their own way achieve real progress, unquote. Inflammation. As described earlier in the chapter on science, it is interesting to observe what happens with diseases where inflammation plays an important role. Pickers discovered that Wim Hof is capable of controlling his inflammatory proteins. Could this be meaningful for people who take anti-inflammatory medications? As we said before, the people tested in Hof's group were healthy. So we do not have any tested information about the WHM and its effects on people who are sick. We don't know whether people who take anti-inflammatory medications could benefit from it. But it is a proven fact that people can control their own inflammatory proteins. So the same may be true for those who take drugs to control inflammation. These medications are not always successful and can have serious side effects. The four main types of anti-inflammatory drugs. Corticosteroids are adrenal gland cortex hormones that stimulate the production of anti-inflammatory proteins. The most widely known corticosteroid is prednisone. Antibodies act on a specific protein and inhibit the inflammation that is linked to that protein. An example of an antibody is anti-TNFX. Non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, or NSAIDs, relieve inflammation. Examples are aspirin and ibuprofen. Disease-modifying anti-rheumatic drugs, or DMARDs, reduce tissue damage through reducing inflammation. An example of a DMARD is methotrexate. The list of diseases and health problems linked to inflammation is growing rapidly as we gain new insights. The diseases include rheumatism, Crohn's disease, high blood pressure, obesity, insomnia, type 2 diabetes, Alzheimer's, depression, some forms of cancer, and fatigue. We will look at a number of these diagnoses and, especially, see what patients have experienced. Rheumatism. Rheumatism is a collective name for more than 100 diseases. The more well-known are rheumatoid arthritis, osteoarthritis, fibromyalgia, gout, and Bechterew's disease. When doctors talk about rheumatism, they usually mean rheumatoid arthritis. Rheumatoid arthritis is an inflammation of the joints. The cause of the disease is unknown. The American Rheumatism Association uses the following criteria for rheumatoid arthritis. Five of the following must be present for at least 6 weeks. Morning stiffness, pain when moving at least one joint, swelling due to soft tissue thickening in at least one joint, swelling in soft tissue of at least one other joint, characteristic changes in synovial membrane, characteristic nodules on muscle or tendon. If rheumatism is diagnosed, it is usually treated with medication. Breathing exercises or exposure to cold are rarely applied, which is a shame. Cold training can be an effective supplement to regular treatment. Marianne Pepper is an excellent example. Marianne Pepper. I interviewed Marianne Pepper at her house in Dern. Before we started the interview, she wanted to show me something. She opened a plastic bag and tipped out 11 small boxes onto the table. The boxes contained these medicines: omeprazole, 40 milligrams, prednisone, 20 milligrams, levocetirizine, 5 milligrams, naproxen, 250 milligrams, plaquenil, 200 milligrams, clonidine, 0.025 milligrams, naloxicam, diclofenac, Ventolin, paracetamol, and seretide. Marianne used to take all of them. Additionally, she had a prednisone injection every 3 weeks. On October 17, 2013, she decided to stop taking her medications. It was a strange thing to do, as Marianne has rheumatoid arthritis, fibromyalgia, several allergies, and pain all over her body. She was in so much pain that she could not even dress herself. And yet, she decided to stop her medication. Why? She told me that her father died from taking prednisone. As a child, she used to go see a local football team, FC 20, and they would sing the club song, quote, "One Day We'll Be Champions," unquote, together. By the time FC 20 won the league in 2010, her father had already died. His early death still upsets Marianne. She didn't associate her medications with getting better, but with the death of her father. The medications only reduced the symptoms. That is why she decided to stop taking the medications in 2013. After she stopped taking them, she went through hell for a month and a half. She did take sleeping tablets, otherwise she wouldn't have been able to stick it out. Pain, pain, and more pain. It was also a difficult time for her husband. He took care of her, helped her dress, took over a lot of the housework, and stood by his wife. His humor helped to lighten the load during this period, but it was still tough. Even if he touched Marianne, it hurt, so they were unable to make love. Then she saw Wim Hof on television. Intuitively, she thought that Wim could help her. Hof said that we are capable of much more than we think. Marianne wanted to know more, so Wim came to their house to explain the breathing exercises. Marianne started doing the exercises and felt a lot better after the first week. She went to Poland for a week. Along with the breathing exercises, she also trained with exposure to extreme cold. She stepped into an ice-cold stream, just above freezing point, and walked to the top of a mountain in snow in short trousers. By the end of the week, she felt reborn. At home, she made a special bath in the garden to continue training in the cold. It all sounds too good to be true, but Marianne emphasizes that it takes a lot of hard work. She does breathing exercises every day and takes an ice bath at least twice a week. If she doesn't do it, the pain comes back immediately. Yet, she is delighted. Her rheumatologist had advised her to get an infrared lamp and take medication, but Wim Hof taught her about the benefits of cold, and now she no longer needs medication. She now refuses to call herself a patient. Her husband agrees, with a contented wink. Crohn's disease. We also have an exceptional story to tell about Crohn's disease. Crohn's disease is a chronic disease of the stomach and the intestines that affects about 20,000 people in the Netherlands. Mostly it affects the large or small intestines. The inflammation reduces the absorption of some nutrients in the small intestine, leading to loss of weight and nutrient deficiencies. This also causes fatigue and a wide variety of non-specific health problems. The inflammation can also cause permanent damage to the wall of the intestines, resulting in blood loss. The problems are not restricted to the intestines. People with Crohn's disease often also have pain in their joints and skin diseases. Sometimes, sections of the intestine have to be removed to keep the disease under control. However, there is evidence that the Wim Hof method can keep the disease at bay. Matthijs Storm. In 2008, Matthijs Storm was diagnosed with Crohn's disease. He was relieved to finally have a diagnosis. He had been suffering from fatigue for many years. After work, he would just collapse in exhaustion on the couch. He could never really indulge his love of martial arts because his system was too weak. But after a visit to the doctor and a referral to the hospital, he knew why. He had Crohn's disease. Storm has a humorous way of describing the disease. Quote, "I have an extreme right-wing intestinal wall," he says. "It attacks everything that is foreign, and that leads to inflammation." Unquote. He was prescribed drugs to inhibit the inflammation. Most of them had no effect. Only a few heavy-duty medicines from the TNFX group, biological agents, seemed to bring some relief. Storm learned to live with the disease. He identified with it since it explained his fatigue and limitations. But after 2 years, something started to gnaw at him. Was he self-imposing more restrictions than necessary? Of course, Crohn's disease is Crohn's disease, but there are many ways to generate more energy, even with chronic intestinal inflammation. He started reading books about breathing, fitness, and nutrition. He also started meditating. In his quest for more knowledge and information, he found Wim Hof's website and watched a few video clips. He was immediately enthusiastic about the benefits of breathing techniques, but he didn't think Hof's cold training was appropriate for him. Then, more than a year later, his brother-in-law told him that Wim only eats once a day. This encouraged him to take another look at Wim's website. Maybe chronic inflammation of the intestines could be relieved by eating less. On the website, Storm read that the results of medical research cautiously suggested that Wim could use his method to influence his immune system. Storm was fascinated. He decided to attend one of Wim's workshops to see whether the WHM could help him. Storm accidentally registered for an instructor's weekend rather than a regular workshop, but he still took part in everything, the breathing exercises and sitting in an ice bath. After the weekend, he was delighted and bursting with energy. Storm regained control over his body. For the whole weekend, he had not felt like a patient. Back home, he started doing the exercises and his mood improved. In the evenings after work, he had the time and energy to do odd jobs around the house. His energy levels continued to rise sharply, and he even started cycling back and forth to work, which he had not been able to do before. These experiences inspired him to do more. Storm continued with the instructor's course and gained more and more control over his body. Then, out of the blue, Wim Hof asked him if he wanted to climb Kilimanjaro. Quote, "What?" unquote, Storm thought. Quote, "Isn't that a 6,000-meter, 3.7-mile, high mountain in Tanzania?" unquote. For a long time, Storm doubted that the trip was a good idea before he decided to go. During the training, his confidence in his abilities grew even more. He cycled to work in the mornings bare-chested, even in temperatures only a few degrees above freezing. One morning, the police pulled him over and asked if he was feeling okay. When he explained that he was going to climb Kilimanjaro with Wim Hof and was doing cold training, the officers laughed and wished him good luck. They had already heard about Wim through local hero Hank Vandenberg, who also worked with the WHM and barely had any more problems with his rheumatism. The expedition to Kilimanjaro was tough, but Storm made it to the top and was delighted. A month later, he had surprising news from the hospital. They hadn't found any more indications of inflammation in his stools. Storm was convinced this was because of the breathing exercises and the cold training. Later, Storm learned that he had to keep doing the exercises. In his enthusiasm about having so much more energy, he started doing too much. He started working harder and renovating his house. He also devoted a lot of attention to his wife, who was heavily pregnant. All of this left him too little time to do the exercises, and his inflammation levels increased again. The Crohn's disease came back. When it was first discovered in 2008, Storm was happy to find an explanation for his problems when he was officially diagnosed as a Crohn's patient. Now, he was happy because he knew what he had to do. Now, he knew how to combat the inflammation. He needed to get back to hoffing. In the period that followed, he once again felt he had control over his body. He was not dependent only on doctors and drugs. His doctor responded positively to this development and emphasized the importance of balance in our lives. The Wim Hof method helps Storm maintain that balance and gives him the strength to stay in control of his life. He might have Crohn's disease, but Storm is no longer a patient. Depression. It is well known that people with autoimmune diseases suffer from persistent inflammatory reactions when the immune system attacks a body's own tissue. In the 1980s, immunologist Hemmo Drexaga noticed something remarkable. Behavioral disorders like autism and schizophrenia proved to be surprisingly common among people with autoimmune diseases. It occurred to Drexaga that persistent inflammatory responses could also affect the brain. Initially, his ideas did not receive much support from psychiatrists, but nowadays they are increasingly taking his theory seriously. In an interesting article in NWT magazine, journalist Jaap de Vries wrote that in recent years, psychiatric disorders, especially depression, autism, and schizophrenia, have been increasingly linked to the immune system. It is claimed that they are caused by dormant inflammations, disrupting the normal functioning of the brain. One indication is that psychiatric patients have higher concentrations of cytokines, signaling molecules for the immune system, in their blood and brains. The immune system works differently in the brain than in the rest of the body. The brain has its own immune cells, known as microglia. They are activated when the brain is under a threat. At least, that is how they are supposed to work. Someone suffering from psychiatric disorders like depression may have microglia in a permanent state of readiness. That is a disastrous situation. Microglia are responsible for the brain's resistance to threats, and they also maintain links between neurons. They break these links or create new ones as necessary, but they cannot do everything at the same time. So if they are activated to respond to a threat, they cannot also maintain the links between neurons. As a result of long-term permanent readiness, the links within the brain can function less efficiently. You can compare microglia to traffic controllers who make sure the traffic runs smoothly. If a traffic controller is attacked by a wasp and he tries to chase it away, he can no longer regulate the traffic, which will become chaotic. It is therefore important for your brain that the microglia are not continually occupied trying to combat real or imaginary threats. The Netherlands is officially one of the happiest countries in the world. Yet nearly 1 million people in the Netherlands take antidepressants. While antidepressants combat depression, they are also prescribed to treat anxiety or compulsive disorders. This paradox inspired Trudy De Heu to write a book, De Depressie Epidemie. In English, the depression epidemic. In her book, DeHue expresses reservations about the effectiveness of pills and is critical of the triumphant mood of the 1980s, when Prozac was heralded as the pharmaceutical answer to depression. After all, what do we know about depression? Is it caused by personal experiences that result in despondency and apathy? Or is it a standalone disorder caused by disruptions in our hormones and neurotransmitters? It may be triggered by unpleasant experiences, but not necessarily in every case. The extent which breathing exercises and cold training can help alleviate depression or help people to recover from it will need to be researched more closely in the coming years. Wim Hof is currently working with a large number of psychiatrists to investigate what approach works, possibly in combination with medication. Asthma. Just as high levels of inflammation play an important role in rheumatism, Crohn's disease, and perhaps in depression, an inflamed epithelium, the layer of cells that line the airways, is also important in relation to asthma. Konstantin Buteyko, the Ukrainian doctor and scientist already mentioned in the chapter on breathing, said, quote, "No deep breathing, no asthma," unquote. We understand what happens in the body during an asthma attack, but doctors are still in the dark about why people get asthma in the first place. According to the World Health Organization, there are between 100 and 150 million asthma patients in the world. In the Netherlands, some 430,000 people have been officially diagnosed by their doctors as suffering from asthma. Currently, asthma is mainly tackled by treating the symptoms. Drugs like Ventolin ensure that the patient gets air quickly, but these drugs do not cure the problem. Buteyko claimed to have discovered the real cause of asthma, a response to chronic, often unconscious, hyperventilation. If you suffer from chronic hyperventilation, the body loses too much carbon dioxide. See the chapter on breathing. Carbon dioxide plays an important role in a wide variety of processes in the body, including the absorption of oxygen by muscles and organs. When someone breathes too much for an extended period, the body protests and tries to prevent further loss of carbon dioxide by making it more difficult to exhale. One way the body can do this is to tense up the muscles around the airways. This is what happens during an asthma attack. Buteyko sees asthma as one of the body's defense mechanisms, an attempt to prevent further loss of carbon dioxide. Dick Kuiper, founder of the Dutch Buteyko Institute, wrote a book about this titled Leven onder Asthma, or Living with Asthma. Breathing expert Stans van der Pol also agrees on the importance of sufficient carbon dioxide. What happens in the lungs during an asthma attack? In his book, Kuiper explains that three changes occur. 1. The airways, the supply and waste removal pipes of our breathing system, cramp. The airways are surrounded by smooth muscle tissue and run deep into the lungs, continually supply the alveoli with fresh air. During an asthma attack, this smooth muscle tissue can cramp up. This can happen in the upper part of the lungs, but may also occur much deeper. For example, the cramping can also happen close to the alveoli. The airways then become constricted, making breathing more difficult. 2. Inflamed epithelium. The airways are covered with a thin layer of cells called epithelium. The epithelium can become inflamed in response to chemicals that we breathe in, for example. The epithelium swells up, which makes breathing more difficult. 3. Increased mucus production. The epithelium comprises cells that produce mucus and cilia cells, which together ensure that the lungs remain clean and sterile. The mucus captures dust and bacilli that cover the inside wall of the airways, while the cilia transport the mucus away towards the throat. During an asthma attack, the epithelium can produce so much extra mucus that the cilia have difficulty removing it. Again, this makes breathing more difficult. With asthma, the main focus is on inflammation of the airways. With this in mind, Professor of Clinical Chemistry Fritz Muskiet's response to the test at the Radboud UMC is especially interesting. Quote, "Because of our current lifestyles, we live with a permanent low level of infection. You could say that we are chronically infected, but because it is so low, we don't feel it at all. We don't notice it, but it is the breeding ground of many diseases. Wim Hof's group has shown us that it is possible to repress that inflammatory response," unquote. If one of the main physical changes during an asthma attack is inflammation of the airways, and we know that asthma sufferers, that is, people who use a short-acting B2 adrenergic agonist to dilate the airways more than 3 times a week, are advised to take anti-inflammatory drugs, then the Wim Hof method could achieve the same result with fewer side effects. Konstantin Buteyko emphasizes the importance of more shallow breathing and says that breathing in through the nose is sufficient to ensure that you do not breathe too deeply. Wim Hof's breathing techniques, which involve breathing in deeply and then